Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started.
Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Well, we're in between interviews and fire starters this week, so I dusted off a re-listen of a Base Camp classic, and this one truly is a classic all the way back from season one. I thought since I was talking a bit about depression and how to move through it last week, you might appreciate the deeper dive from season one with my old friend Benjamin Seaman, who just happens to be a very successful New York City psychotherapist with some great insights around this topic. Next week, we're back to an interview, and I have a number of good guests coming on, as well as a couple of good fire starters that I'm working on. But for now, enjoy this Base Camp classic with Benjamin Seaman. The big D, men and depression. I spent my early years as a man with an assumption that any man who had depression was too weak to handle life's natural ups and downs. After all, I was an athlete, and athletes are taught to keep their energy up and throw any obstacles, emotional or otherwise, to the side so that you can be all that you can be, quote unquote. Then I hit my 30s, and it descended upon me. This dark cloud that seemed to sap my energy and my motivation. I felt heavy. I thought I was just in a funk. This will pass, I told myself. Weeks and then months went by. It did not and would not pass. I had no compass or reference for this. My solution? Hey, let's drink more. Yeah, that might do the trick. I don't think I was even aware at the time that alcohol was a serious depressant. That was how clueless I was. One night, my very intuitive and very intelligent wife came over to sit with me on the couch. She could see my struggle and confusion and knew that this was not normal for me. She told me that she thought I had depression and that the first step would be to start to see a therapist. At first, I was resistant. After all, I am not a man who gets depressed. Yet as I sat with myself for a few more days, it became more and more obvious that she was right. I looked up therapists in my area and started to gently walk myself back to wellness and energy. Men seem to fear therapy. They don't want others to know they are seeing a therapist, and men can be afraid of what they will say or reveal during these sessions. It takes courage to work towards your wounds. But the gifts of this process are exceptional. Greater clarity, better emotional intelligence, more compassion for yourself and for others, and better energy for your life. If you are a man who is honestly struggling with the phase that you're currently in, I highly recommend that you start the process of working through this. And that means finding someone qualified to talk to. I think you will see, as I did, that even in a few sessions, you'll start to feel things moving in a good direction. Much of what you learn in therapy is patience, both with yourself and patience with the process. As men, we are cultured to make things happen fast, and in many ways to ignore our inner life. Moving through a depression, no matter the severity, requires that the soul dictates the pace. The mind moves fast, but the mind can't uncover the deeper messages and mysteries that are often hidden in depression. With a good guide and a commitment to moving at the soul's pace, I have seen many men move through a dark place and towards more light and inner awareness. Lastly, it takes courage to face yourself. This is always true, but maybe never more so than when facing what has been hidden and working to express and understand it. Getting help is no longer a sign of weakness. It never was. Getting support is a commitment to yourself and your loved ones. It sends a message that the coming year is going to be different than last year. It says, I am taking steps towards greater self-care and better self-awareness. Good luck with this, men. Before we get to our interview, I thought it'd be good to look at some relevant statistics to help us understand this issue. According to the American Psychological Association, 30% of men will suffer from a period of depression in their lifetime. The National Institute of Mental Health states that 6 million American men suffer from depression each year. And depression is a high risk factor for suicide. Suicide rates for American men is 4 times higher than women. Every day, 123 men in the U.S. and 84 men in the U.K. take their own lives. In Australia, 3 out of 4 suicides are men. This dynamic is not just happening here in the States. It seems to be happening all over the place. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview.
My guest today is Benjamin Seaman. Ben is a psychotherapist who has been practicing in New York City for 20 years, specializing in couples and emotional literacy for men of all backgrounds. He has appeared in print, TV, and radio outlets on various self-help issues. Mr. Seaman was co-director of an annual spiritual retreat for men from 2005 to 2017 and continues to offer workshops on creativity, relationships, and other personal growth topics. You can read about his practice at BenjaminSeaman.com. Mr. Seaman is also a visual artist, and you can view his work on Instagram at visualartbyben. Here is my interview with Ben Seaman.
Okay, I'm here with Ben Seaman, who's a return guest. Ben was on episode 4 as we talked all about emotional intelligence. And today I've got Ben on for the episode around depression. Ben is a psychotherapist. So Ben, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Tony. Great. It's great to be back.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been super excited about this episode. It's been in the hopper for a while and we finally coordinated the schedule. Men and depression, it's like one of these things that's not particularly talked about a lot. And it kind of lurks in the shadows. What are the signs? Like, you're a man and things are going on. What are the signs of depression? How does a man might know he has depression?
Because it's such a great question, because men are so socialized to basically have two feelings, psyched and pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. Anything else is sort of, you're just sort of, even if you're not some kind of Rambo macho man, the message is to deliver and produce and slog through.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not cultivated to know how we're feeling exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be really great if everybody took a deep breath and just listened to these symptoms and ask yourself if you ever felt this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a long list, but I'm just going to say them slowly so people will catch it.
Great.
One is persistent sadness lasting 2 weeks or more.
Mm-hmm.
Another is a loss of interest in your favorite things, finding no fun or enjoyment in life, loss of self-confidence, feeling guilty, bad, unlikable, or not good enough, feeling empty inside, feeling useless or unable to cope with life, feeling bored all the time, increased feelings of anxiety, an inability to see a future for yourself, thinking everything is pointless, thinking life is not worth living, thoughts of death or suicide, wanting to go to sleep and never wake up again, especially low mood upon waking, feeling more irritable, frustrated, or aggressive than usual, and trouble concentrating on things, foggy head, poor memory, loss of concentration.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like to just hear all those symptoms?
Yeah, I mean, that is quite a list. And, you know, my sense, too, is there's probably a lot of men that have many of those but would never say they're depressed. I remember when I've had depression twice. We'll talk about it in just a little bit here. But the first time, my wife said, "I think you're depressed," when I was like 30. And she may as well have said, "You've got an alien that's living on your head." Like, I was just like, no way. No, it couldn't be that, right? That's for other guys. Right. I mean, but I had many of those. I had many of those things that you just listed going on. I just could not get both feet over there, right? Yeah.
I mean, one thing I would hope that people take home from our talk today is that I don't see depression as like a switch that just flips on one day. Mm. I see it more as a dynamic process. Mm. And I think we all have ways we quote unquote depress ourselves. And I see depression as anger turned inward. Mm. And it's a relationship with yourself that's critical or frustrated or demanding.
Mm-hmm.
We'll unpack that a little bit more, but I think that we can all just learn how to practice self-compassion, mm-hmm. even if that sounds a little new agey. Because I think everybody might have a taste of some of this stuff, even just on a given day.
Absolutely.
And it's about developing a practice with yourself that is embracing all your reactions to life.
Yeah.
Not slogging through even when things feel terrible.
Is there causes of depression, or is it more, you know, the complications of life, and you maybe you're repressing emotions over time, and then it just piles up and all of a sudden everything's really flat. I mean, or is it sometimes one thing that all of a sudden you're in this, you know, pool of loss and you can't pick yourself out of it?
I mean, basically I would say there's, and then, you know, just a caveat, there are some people out there that have true organic brain-based depression that's from some type of chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. But the pharmaceutical industry would like you to think all of us have that chemical imbalance and get us all on some kind of meds. Mm. I think for the most part, most of us don't ever need to take meds and don't need to think that we have a chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. But what I do think depression is a reaction to something that we can't process fully. So let's say I lose a loved one or I get fired from a job unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have my reaction, whether it's the rage of losing something or being fired or the grief of this change. Mm-hmm. But if I'm accepting of my feelings, I'm going to just process right through them. And I'm going to talk about it with whoever. I'm going to embrace the feeling. I'm going to shed the tears. I'm going to get mad at the right people that I should be getting mad at, mm-hmm. but it's not blocked. But there are so many ways that we block our emotion, whether it's, well, okay, I just got this bad news, but I got to keep it together to finish class.
Right.
And then I get home and I see my partner and I got to keep it together for my family. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you haven't let yourself feel your feelings. Mm-hmm. So that starts to build up. And if you're already someone who's like not cultured to feel your feelings, their setup is already in there.
Right. Is there a difference between, you hear a lot about clinical depression. Is the clinical depression different than situational depression? Is the clinical more of the chemical imbalance that you spoke of earlier? Or is there a difference?
What I would say is like situational is like what I'm describing, like mm-hmm. Loss of a loved one, unexpected loss of a job.
Yeah.
So many different kind of acute incident type situations. Mm-hmm. Really clinical depression is just that situational stuff that hasn't worked itself out.
Okay.
Most of us have like what I call like a happiness set point that we just eventually gravitate back to once we've processed something. Mm-hmm. Some people that a loss of a job, they don't recover from it, whether it's because they never get that job back. That's brings them that level of dignity, or mm-hmm. It started a seed of self-doubt that they never quite kick. The persistent depression that goes past, say, a 6-week period, mm-hmm. is that gets into what we call clinical depression.
Okay. Is there, you hear a lot about burnout today,
you know,
a burnout. Is that a shade of depression? Is that a different animal? Yeah. Is that just
burnout exhaustion? Depression that's related to undue work stress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That it's enduring something that normally would not depress you, not upset you to go through it, but that it becomes long-term, sustained, and with no relief.
So the treatment, if I'm a client of yours and I'm coming in and I'm saying, you know, all these things are going on, I'm just feeling burnout. And then the communication and maybe some of the recommendations might be the same as somebody that came in for depression in a way. I mean, I'm generalizing, but
if me and my client agree this is burnout, mm-hmm. what we'll be looking at is changing the work level.
Got it.
And saying, you know, and I have plenty of clients that will admit to me they haven't taken a vacation in 3 years.
Yeah.
Let's get you a week off and see how it feels. Remember what feeling like yourself is.
Right. I mean, I hear a lot out in the community. I hear more men copping to that they've got burnout because that seems more acceptable probably for
Great.
Other than say, I'm looking at, I may be depressed because they just don't want to be smeared.
Burnout is sort of like, I was given too much work. It's not my fault. It's not my character flaw.
Correct. Yeah.
I must be weak.
Exactly. But did you ever suffer from depression at all?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's compare a little bit. Like I had two instances. I had it for when I was a young man, and I'll tell you the situation and then kind of what I learned from it. Cause there's teaching inside of depression, right? There's things you learn about self-care and stuff. So the first time I had it, I had moved and left all my college friends. I just got married and I moved to New York City and I didn't know anybody. And, you know, it was, I was lonely. My wife was in drama school and I really didn't know anybody. And,
yeah.
And I was away from my steady Eddie friends. And, you know, all of a sudden I was spiraling downward and drinking too much. And, you know, it was the first time once my wife said, I think you're depressed. And I went, what, really? And I started to kind of look into it. I got into therapy and that was such a great thing. I learned so much in those therapy sessions about my inner life that I still apply to this day.
That's great.
And then the second time was the move back to Seattle from New York. And again, I was left all the friends from New York and I was just feeling not where I wanted to be as a man. I was feeling like a failure on a lot of levels as a 40-year-old, not, you know, and just dealing with a lot of shame. I was drinking too much again. Mm-hmm. And the gold in that round was I got sober. I finally decided, look, I've had enough of this. Every time I'm stressed out, I start drinking too much. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I let that go.
That's such a gift.
Yeah. And that was a huge gift. I mean, I feel so much healthier today because of that realization, but it wouldn't have come had I not gone through that kind of dark night of the soul and gone, okay, what's going on with me? I feel flat. I'm not inspired. I should be more energized right now. And I'm not, I just feel like, you know, bored and uninspired and not in my mission or any of those things. So, yeah. How about you?
It's so interesting the way you frame it, because you're able to see them as distinct kind of moments in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so much more used to, for whatever reason, there's no right or wrong, but I'm used to seeing it much more as waves of stuff.
Mm.
That just things darken and things lighten up. And I'm just sort of aware of like processing stuff on lots of different levels and even feeling sometimes that part of me is very depressed about something while another part of me is rather elated.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm sort of a complicated person inside, I guess. But I do remember when I was 15, I ran away from home. I was a very angry, rebellious kid. And I would
see that.
You could see that kid that I was. And I was such a, I think I was in a very dark place.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, I did have the good fortune up in a therapist's office and found every session to be this revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I come from an emotionally illiterate family. And this therapist would just throw away phrases that were must have been easy for him. But to me, they were like a light opening up and shedding light on dynamics and processes that must have been easy for him to see. But for me, were like the first time I'd ever heard such things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even just identifying, I'll bet that person was jealous of you when they did that. And I would say, oh my God, that's a revelation.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. But it isn't as if, oh, I suddenly was not depressed anymore after going to therapy. There was plenty of struggles coming up. Then on my way to college, college had its own struggles.
Yeah.
I spent years in therapy working through this stuff. It's hard to say if there was one day I went, oh, okay, I'm not depressed anymore.
Mm-hmm. But
there's just stuff I'm always chewing on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, every year I just can count, you know, more and more ways I'm self-compassionate.
That's great. I mean, that's what I was going to ask you is, did you find that your self-care went up by going through that?
Absolutely.
I never wanted to slow down and listen to myself, but it forced me those bouts with that kind of dark, you know, matter that was going on in my inner life. You know, one of the impacts was that I learned to slow down, stop pushing through everything, stop acting like everything's great. Like it's okay to be, you know, confused and lost and just not feeling like reaching out to people. It's okay to just grab some soup and a blanket and just kind of take care of myself.
Yeah.
And I don't care what people say, you know, like, yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So do you treat a lot of depression in your practice? Is that a common kind of,
the thing is, I don't find it that useful to call it a name.
Okay.
I actually use a type of therapy called internal family systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just ask people if they're aware of any parts inside them at the beginning of a particular session that want some attention. And then we can talk to that part and ask how that part is doing. A lot of times it's a part that feels very put upon by another part that's very tough. And so to me, depression, just 99% of the time, is a tough part of you beating up a vulnerable part of you.
That's great.
So it's a part saying, can't believe you didn't get more done today.
Yeah.
And this other part kind of helplessly saying, yeah, you're right, I could have done more.
Got it.
And just getting deflated.
Yeah.
Versus better conversation would be, let's count the 8 things we did today and give ourselves a gold star for that.
Yeah.
And then check with ourselves, is there anything else we'd like to try to do? And, you know, the same way you would talk to anybody else but yourself.
Right. Yeah, I would show compassion for anybody struggling through stuff, but myself, sometimes it's just like, you don't get the same break. You know, come on, you know, energize yourself, you know, kind of thing. So. Exactly.
There's no friend that would call you up and say, I just didn't get anything done today. And you would be like, yeah, you really fucking didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Get your shit together. Yeah.
It's not your best work.
It's not your best work.
Okay, we resolve.
Can you imagine? Yeah. What a great friend.
I tell people, you wouldn't work for a boss that talks the way you do to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would quit that job in a day.
So it all comes back down to self-love and self-care again, right? It's like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could think of a more macho way to refer to it, but
no.
It's like being the best possible coach to yourself.
Yeah.
And saying, this is what I would have liked for you to have done today, but I'm proud of all the stuff you did do.
Yeah.
And if you didn't do more, maybe you just didn't have the energy and you needed the break.
Right. What are some resources that you would, let's say you had a friend, you know, and you're starting to get, you're not a therapist, you're just a buddy, and you're just noticing that, this dark cloud on my friend, around him has been kind of persistent for the past, say, 6 months or a year. And I want to help him, but I'm not really quite sure, like what's a right, you know, kind of conversation to have with your friend, and where would you point him if you were like, you know, here's a book or here's a website or something that he might go check out, you know, on his own?
That is such a great question. And first of all, I just think if anybody actually talked to their friends about their concern for them, you know, if men all over the country said, hey, I think I'm a little worried about you. I think that would be a cultural revolution right there. It's a little hard to say resources because a lot of it's down to what are local therapists and mental health services that are available there.
Yeah.
But and as cheesy as it is, I think Google can be your friend. And I'm embarrassed to say this, but I am amazed how many times you can Google the exact thing you're concerned about and people have been searching for it.
Yeah.
But there are national hotlines. There are definitely national suicide hotlines. I understand you have some resources that you have at the end of the show.
Yep, absolutely.
I think being there for people is a fantastic resource. Just listening.
Yeah, yeah, and I think for men, knowing it's okay to not have. To not be king of the mountain, or, you know, like, I think sometimes men get, you know, oh man, I was killing it. I was loving my career. Everything's going well. And then like you said, it could be their dad died or their mom passed away, or they got fired all of a sudden and they didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's this kind of dark night of the soul where they're just like, how do I pick myself back up? And then this cascade of just negative affect and sometimes negative self-talk comes in, and it's okay to go through that. That's part of the full spectrum of your emotional life as a man. We're really not built to just go from one victory to the next without any sort of setbacks whatsoever. It's just not the way life is constructed as a learning tool for us.
You know, I'll give you an example. I'm working with a guy right now who was incredibly ambitious as an athlete. And he had a father who was also a very successful athlete, and he grew up knowing that this kind of fearless, aggressive, kill your opponent attitude could work in just about anything he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it served him really well.
Yep.
And he had a lot of fun being great at sports and then being great at his career.
Mm-hmm.
Then he ended up little by little in a firm that just did not honor what he brought to the job.
Got it.
It's kind of complex how to explain, but basically this tool he had inside him no longer worked.
Mm.
And at the same time, this kind of beat the enemy energy ended up turning on him. And he started talking to himself the way he would think towards his opponents.
Oh, man.
He became the recipient of all that aggressive, ambitious energy. Mm. It was now plowing him down. And he started having panic attacks for the first time in his life, which I was able to tell him panic attacks 90% of the time are anger turned inward.
Mm-hmm.
If we just start to identify everything you're angry about, you're going to feel better really fast. And the more we could identify, you're not broken or crazy. You just have this like lightsaber of athletic, aggressive energy aimed right at you.
Yeah.
We have to get it aimed back out of you and into life where it belongs.
Was he able to see how that kind of alpha male way of being, in a way he learned that that's not always going to work in every situation, but was he able to kind of find new resources, or was he looking to assert that again in a better situation and stop the negative self-talk?
Like, I think the interesting thing was we were able to just identify this amazing resource he had.
Mm-hmm.
From a little bit of distance.
Got it.
For him, it'd been automatic.
Totally.
He stood back and appreciated it as a tool that he had and had developed.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of work on just appreciating, dude, you have this amazing energy source that crushes things in its path when it's aimed in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of getting his self-esteem back up and then realizing it's also a powerful weapon that you cannot aim at yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now he's taking steps to change his job around.
That's great. Do men and women handle these episodes differently typically, or do you see, no, it's a human thing, not necessarily a gender thing, or is there definite distinctions between men and women on this?
I mean, I feel like at this point, men and women are more similar than different.
Mm-hmm.
On a lot of things.
Yep.
But I do continue to see a lot of men, especially because I work in couples therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of referrals from couples therapists who have a man who cannot access their emotions.
Yep.
And so they may not be representative of the whole population, but they're guys with often very black and white thinking.
Yep.
And used to kind of slogging through and not listening to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of times there's a lot of addiction.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a
I get you. Yep. I hear you. Well, that's awesome. Ben, thank you so much for being on the show. It is always great to talk to you. You're always insightful. I always love taking a look at things with you as a guide, because I just feel like there's fresh insights for myself and the listeners. And thank you for making time for us and have you back on again. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Great to see you, Tony.
Yeah, you too.
I really appreciate Ben's insights into all this. A couple of the important takeaways and resources. For one, medication is often not needed, despite the pharmaceutical industry's insistence. I think men are wary of prescription drugs as a quick fix, as well they should be. If you can tackle it in a natural way, hey, why not do so? Ben also mentioned that he uses a methodology called internal family systems, and I thought this sounded really interesting. It seems like a particularly useful method to help work through negative self-talk and the messages we may have picked up from our family dynamics. To find a therapist trained in internal family systems, go to www.selfleadership.org. I also loved how Ben framed therapy as an initiation into better self-awareness and inner knowing. This fits with our themes here on Basecamp for Men. And lastly, If you or a loved one are suicidal, the National Helpline is a confidential 24-hour-a-day, 365-days-a-year information service in both English and Spanish. This service provides referrals to local treatment facilities, support groups, and community-based organizations for individuals and family members facing mental or substance use disorders. The number for the National Helpline is 1-800-487-4889.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.